He and his fiance, Justin Makita, plan to get married in New York.
We wish we could do it in California. It's not legal, so we're taking our business elsewhere. Don't let that happen to you, Illinois.
But later in the day, it became clear that could very well happen to Illinois. Backers of gay marriage were at least 3 votes short of being able to pass the measure. One senator was out of the country, another's mother just died, and a third had a family health issue.
The windows are closing a little bit on our ability to get marriage equality done right now.
Bernard Chakasov is the director of the gay rights group Equality Illinois.
We're not fully giving up yet, and you know we're always optimistic that miracles happen, but the chances are lower and lower right now.
It goes without saying gay marriage is a contentious issue. Only one Republican senator voted for civil unions 2 years ago, and he's no longer a member. That means supporters would have to look for the bulk of their votes from among Democrats. But there are several Democrats who oppose gay marriage. Senator John Sullivan is from Rushville in west central Illinois. In keeping with his downstate district, he's one of the more conservative members of the Democratic caucus.
The saying around here is, you know, you vote your district, and that's always important. But there's also, you know, we get into, on these types of issues, you get into kind of, you know, where you believe personally, you know, where it needs to come from. So I think that that's more relevant in some of these bigger social issues.
It's just that sort of personal conscience that's left his fellow Democratic Senator Mike Jacobs from the Quad Cities area undecided.
As a Catholic, I understand the religious pushback and people saying, you know, hey, marriage is for a man and a woman. I understand that. But I also understand that love takes many forms in the new modern society that we live in. And if people love each other, should they not be able to marry? I don't know. I think those are just really difficult questions.
Jacob says he probably won't know how he'll vote until the last minute when he has to decide whether to push the red or green button on his Senate desk. But there are plenty of people who aren't wrestling with their conscience over the issue. That includes Bishop Thomas John Paprocki of the Roman Catholic Diocese of Springfield. He testified before a Senate panel.
Neither two men nor two women can possibly form a marriage. Our law would be wrong if it said that they could.
He says approving gay marriage would enshrine 3 harmful ideas in state law.
1, what essentially makes a marriage is romantic emotional union. 2, children do not need both a mother and a father. 3, the main purpose of marriage is adult satisfactions unrelated to the procreation of children.
Well, you know, we're both Catholic.
Yes.
We raise our children Catholic.
And our parents are here.
Our parents are here.
Who are
They're Catholic. But we're not asking the church to decide this. It's a civil right.
That's Mercedes Santos and Teresa Volpe, who were among dozens of supporters of gay marriage who waited most of the day for a hearing on the subject. They say they raised their children with positive values from their Catholic church in the Rogers Park neighborhood of Chicago.
It's very unfortunate that other people feel, you know, have negative feelings for our family, because really all we are is we are a loving family, a loving couple, and we have great children. Our children, you know, they're here, they're so patient, they're here, they know they're here to support their moms and their family, and, you know, what more can we ask for? And we want Illinois to know that.
At the end of the day, the gay marriage legislation passed out of the committee on a strictly party-line vote. But because of those missing members, the full Senate left town without taking it up. And with only a few days remaining until the current session of the General Assembly adjourns for good, the gay rights group Equality Illinois declared a temporary victory and said it'd be back in the spring. Both the House and Senate will have more Democrats sworn in by then, and gay rights activists say that works in their favor. They're confident gay marriage will eventually be the law in Illinois. They say it's not a question of if, but when. I'm Brian Mackey.
Illinois and the state of California each have new laws in effect this year that bar employers from forcing employees to hand over their social media passwords. Some companies have been asking for these passwords to keep tabs on employees. NPR's Kirk Siegler has this report.
Now, let's say you've cleared the first round of a job interview and you're trying to impress your potential new boss. She asks for your Facebook password. She just wants to check out some of your photos or that status update you wrote when you were tipsy on New Year's. You know, just to make sure you check out. No way, you'd say, right?
The problem is that if you really need a job, you may be inclined to turn over your personal digital or social media credentials.
Brad Shearer is a Washington, D.C.-based social media and tech law attorney. He helped draft California's new Social Media Privacy Act. More and more people are living their lives online, and Cheers says laws like these are a win for the protection of privacy.
You have to ask this question. Is it okay for your employer to be able to bug your home phone or bug your home?
But at the same time, Shearer says, employers shouldn't have to be responsible for what their employees do online. He says a new law in Michigan addresses this problem as well. In total, 6 states now have some sort of social media privacy law: Michigan, California, Illinois, Delaware, New Jersey, and Maryland. Expect more to follow suit in the coming year, even though this actually worries some electronic privacy advocates. Kurt Opsahl is a senior staff attorney with the Electronic Frontier Foundation in San Francisco.
I think there actually are a lot of dangers associated with legislatures trying to regulate technology with law. The better solution for all this would be employers to simply stop doing this without the need for a government intervention.
Or, says Opsahl, a uniform single set of rules for every state. The new Congress may consider federal legislation that attempts to do just that. Kirk Sigler, NPR News.
Since 1900, citizen scientists across the Americas have braved bad weather and lack of sleep to participate in an annual bird count. It's essentially a birdwatching marathon, and in the process, these birders have helped create the world's longest-running database in ornithology and have given scientists a great tool for assessing the health of bird populations. Veronica LaCapra reports.
It's just after 6:30 on a cold winter morning in northern Virginia. It's still really dark, and a hazy, almost full moon hangs just above the horizon. Members of the Loudoun County Bird Count are standing in the middle of a gravel road. They're trying to trick an eastern screech owl into calling out. That's a smartphone app recording that Bruce Hill and his Bird Count team are using.
If they hear their own call, they will typically respond either territorially or because they're interested in finding a mate, something like that.
Hill says he can recognize about 300 different species just by hearing them. He's been doing this bird count for at least 20 years.
It is definitely addictive.
It's known as the Christmas bird count, but teams have from mid-December to January 5th to get their counting done. Jeff LeBaron directs the program for the National Audubon Society, which consolidates the data.
There are people that fly across the country or crisscross the country to do counts.
LeBaron did his first holiday bird count in the late 70s and has hardly missed a year since. He says the count started back in 1900 as a reaction to a very different holiday tradition. The side hunt, as it was known, had teams competing not to count birds, but to shoot and kill them. That first year, 27 people participated in the count. LeBaron says this winter, they're expecting more than 60,000.
And it's pretty much the same people doing it the same way in the same areas at the same time of year every year, so you get really good trend data over time.
David Bonter is a bird scientist with the Cornell Lab of Ornithology.
We're seeing some really big changes in where birds are being seen across North America.
One big change is that many birds are expanding their winter ranges further north.
Very likely the warming climate has something to do with that. The birds are often limited at the northern edge of their range by severe winter weather. And with a series of mild winters, that allows birds to survive at the northern limits of their range where they may not have in the past.
Scientists are also seeing changes due to spreading industrial-scale agriculture and urban development. Prairie birds are declining, but birds that go to feeders, like cardinals and jays, are doing great.
So we're going to walk down this way a little ways and try again for a barred owl.
Back at the Virginia Bird Count, it's almost sunrise. Bruce Hill and his team have been at it for about an hour. The group has found plenty of birds: nuthatches, chickadees, a flicker, even a bald eagle perched on a distant tree. But no owls.
A lot of times you'll walk right by owls and not even know it. They usually just sit very still, and they're usually near a trunk somewhere, and unless you're really looking for them hard, you'll miss them.
My hands and feet are starting to get a little numb. Then suddenly, we see it.
There he is. There's a barred owl right there, flying.
The large brown bird glides across the road in front of us, then disappears into a patch of cedar trees.
Excellent.
By the end of the day, Hill and his team will have racked up a total of 67 species. Almost 4,300 birds. Not a record, but still pretty good. Veronique LaCapra, NPR News.
Rob Cantor's Environmental Almanac yesterday dealt with the Champaign County bird count. Details on that are on the AM page at will.illinois.edu.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 4th of January, 2013. It's the birthday of historian Doris Kearns Goodwin, born Brooklyn, 1943. author of Team of Rivals, The Political Genius of Abraham Lincoln, came out in 2005, was widely talked about around Washington, a book about how Abraham Lincoln built an alliance made up of his former enemies. Doris Goodwin said, Lincoln's political genius was rooted in his remarkable array of emotional strengths, which enabled him to form friendships with rivals who had previously disdained him, to put past grudges aside, to assume responsibility for the failure of subordinates, to share credit with ease, and to learn from mistakes. It's the birthday of Sir Isaac Newton, born in Woolsthorpe, England, 1643. He was a premature baby. It was said that he was so small he could fit into a quart pot. He studied mathematics, physics on his own, developed his theories of gravity and optics. He invented the reflecting telescope. And at the age of 43, Newton published his Principia, which overturned nearly everything then believed about the universe up to that point. He proved that the celestial bodies were governed by the same laws of physics as objects on Earth. He incorporated Kepler's laws of planetary motion into his own theories about gravity and established his own three laws of motion. Sir Isaac Newton, who wrote, I do not know what I may appear to the world to be, but to myself I seem to have been only like a boy playing on the seashore and diverting myself in now and then finding a smoother pebble or a prettier shell than ordinary, whilst the great ocean of truth lay all undiscovered around me. It's the birthday of Jakob Grimm, the elder of the brothers Grimm, born in Hanau, Germany, 1785, who, along with his brother, gathered oral folk tales in several volumes called Children's and Household Tales, including Snow White, Sleeping Beauty, Rumpelstiltskin, Rapunzel, many others, stories that have been significantly toned down over the years from the violent versions that the Grimm brothers knew. Here's a poem for today by Billy Collins, The Fish. As soon as the elderly waiter placed before me the fish I had ordered, it began to stare up at me with its one flat, iridescent eye. I feel sorry for you, it seemed to say, eating alone in this awful restaurant, bathed in such unkindly light.